Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like arena football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Wolfman Jeff Sammet. Yep, 2.5 hours of this voice. Enjoy that. Yeah, I got a sore throat. With Arden Zwelling and Mike Cormack this week. Guys, bear with me this morning. I sound a lot worse than I feel.
You sound great.
Do I sound great,
That's
really?
Brilliant.
I sound good?
Just
good.
Phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. Good. Well, I hope you enjoy it because this is going to be 2 hours of this. I hazard a guess to say you guys are going to be doing the bulk of the talking over the next couple of hours.
Don't count on it. It's going to hang you out to dry, bud.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. All right, well, guys, we got a lot of ground to cover on the show. And later on this hour, we've got to talk about the U.S. Open, but more so the course than anything else. I would talk a bit of Tiger as well as some of the leaders, but the course is just a big subject of conversation that we've got to talk about a little later on this hour. In an hour's time, I'll look at the National Hockey League approaching the draft and maybe focusing in on the Leafs as well with Phaneuf and Kessel and the countdown that is them being a Toronto Maple Leaf as it stands right now, because I don't think that's going to last very long. And later on in the show, I'll look at the NBA and David Blatt versus LeBron James. That seems to be a big story from this past week, along with the Golden State Warriors championship parade. So we'll talk about all that. But guys, we've got to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays to kick things off. How about this? Now we've got another winning streak. It's up to 3. They've won 9 in a row at home. That's the first time in 17 years they've done that. And Marco Estrada stepping up, guys, last night, taking a no-hitter into the 8th. Basically the way we drew it up, that Estrada would be able to do that on about 2,000 pitches last night. And in Arden, you wrote a piece on him. He was outstanding last night.
Yeah, he said he would have thrown 200 if it looked like he was going to have to. I don't know how long they were really prepared to leave him out there, but you know, you asked Gibby after the game and he said, "Oh, you'll never know, but don't mess with the baseball gods." So I think that they would have left him out there for quite a bit of time. And yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know if Marco Estrada's arm falls off, it's not the greatest. You know, we're not talking about an Aaron Sanchez, like a young prospect here, or Marcus Stroman.
Oh, so he's disposable is what you're saying. He's like a handy wipe, is he?
It's a harsher way of saying it.
The handy wipe of the Blue Jays starting rotation.
He may not have that many more opportunities to throw no-hitters in his career, so you got to let the guy go for it. It's hard to take it away from him, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And, you know, okay, so right now you got a rotation, guys, of... You got Estrada in there. You got Burley. You got Dickey. You got Hutchison. You got Copeland.
He's got Copeland.
I mean, is this a rotation that you can depend on at least right now? That's going to take you into a playoff race or into playoff contention in September?
I don't think the rotation is good enough to get them to the playoffs as currently constructed. I've felt for most of the season that the Jays are going to need to make a deal if they're going to make the playoffs. I think they can be in contention, but I don't know if they can get over the hump. I think Daniel Norris is really intriguing. A lot's going to depend on, A, whether they trade him for another starter at the deadline or whether he's able to come up and pitch the way he did in spring training when he was really one of the more dominant starters in the Grapefruit League. So much is going to depend on Daniel Norris, like I said, whether he leaves and brings back something in return or whether he's able to come up and fill the gap. Who knows how long Sanchez is going to be out? That's a huge question. It looks like it may not be too bad. There was some questions about whether or not he may be able to throw. Arden, was he throwing an offside session? Or
no, he's not throwing yet. He's not going to throw for a few days. It's not a good situation with Sanchez there.
Yeah, it didn't sound as dire as it might have been earlier in the week. Sounds like they may be holding out hope that maybe he can go down and get a session and Dunedin maybe come up.
He's in Dunedin right now.
Yeah.
That's where he is right now. So maybe. Go ahead.
Maybe a month?
Yeah, I don't know.
They
can't
put a timetable on it.
I hate putting timetables on things because they're not saying anything. Like, he's not throwing yet. So I mean, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, because you hear things about, you know, oh, yeah, a guy will be good. You know, look at friggin' Johan Santana, right? Like, oh, yeah, no, he'll be good. Wow. You know, maybe he'll get thrown by the end of spring training. Here we are, June 20th. He's still not throwing, right?
I don't know how many people are counting on Johan Santana.
A lot of Blue Jays fans. Every day I get questions about Johan Santana. Every single day on Twitter.
Just asking Gibby about Johan Santana. Can we get a Johan Santana update?
Do we have a Johan Santana update? It's not going to happen. That's the update. Your dreams are dead.
Well, luckily the Blue Jays don't have Ricky Romero anymore, so we can stop asking those questions, right? Because that was a daily thing, Ricky Romero.
Dustin McGowan. Absolutely.
Dustin McGowan. Oh, poor Dustin McGowan. DFA'd by the Phillies. Boy, he got lit up this week.
Sean Markham DFA'd this week, too.
Oh, really?
Bad week for ex-Blue Jays.
Is it the same day?
Yeah.
I think it might have been the same day.
That flew under the radar for me.
You can draw a straight line from Sean Markham to Brett Laurie to Josh Donaldson. You know what I mean? Because Markham was traded for Laurie.
That's right.
And then Laurie and some other pieces traded for Donaldson.
So in a roundabout way, the Blue Jays turned Sean Markham into Josh Donaldson.
That worked out pretty nicely, didn't it?
That worked out good.
That worked out well.
Got to reach out to Markham, get him on the show.
Yeah.
Aaron Sanchez is going to be down for a bit, and that's fine. The Blue Jays are 14 of 16 with this rotation. Ride that horse as far as it'll take you.
Yeah, no kidding.
They do need some help, though. They definitely will need
help. I don't think Scott Copeland... Yeah, I don't think Scott Copeland's like the long-term answer, but I mean, you know, you're not going to move Dickey, Burley, or Hutchison from this rotation. Those guys are there to stay.
Yep.
Marco Estrada almost threw a no-hitter last night. He's been fine. He's been throwing quality starts. He hasn't been getting lit up. I mean, he's been giving them dependable innings. So it's really the Copeland spot. And like you said, Mike, you know, Daniel Norris could be back soon. Could have a Felix DeBrandt come up. You could have a Randy Wolf. Maybe a trade for somebody. I mean, there's a lot of options there.
What do you think is the biggest priority? With Arden Zwelling and Mike Cormack, I'm Wolfman Jeff Sammet on the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. What's the biggest priority, number one priority to you guys? Is it a number one starter or a closer?
To me, I would like them to add a bullpen arm. I think that is the top priority right now. I think the bullpen is maybe like one really, really good piece away from being good and two average pieces away from being good.
I agree with Arden. I think they need to back the bullpen arm. I think Papelbon on paper is the perfect fit. I know that the dollars and cents may not make sense for the Blue Jays, or the acquisition cost may be a bit high at the moment. I think that price is going to come down as you get closer to the trade deadline. There's not a ton of suitors for Papelbon. Obviously, the Cubs are rumored to be in there too. I doubt they're willing to pay a high price either, but we'll see. But I think Papelbon just adds so much to the back of the bullpen. You allow everybody to like drop back an inning or two or up an inning or two, depending on your perspective. He's got the playoff pedigree. He's a bit of a jerk, which I think is good to have in the closer's role. There's nothing wrong with that. Worked for BJ Ryan and other guys in the past.
Yeah, well, short stint.
And you need a guy who can get some strikeouts. We've seen with Brett Cecil, like he typically has good strikeout numbers, but there's been some broken bats and some bloop hits against him, and Cecil's better or best suited to come in the seventh, eighth inning, even a high leverage situation. Just takes a load off everybody else back there. We've seen Liam Hendricks pitch in high leverage situations. I know that's not what Anthopoulos and Gibbons want to see on a regular basis. So Soon is pretty green. He's not going to dominate and pitch at an all-star level all season long, I don't think, as great as he is. So Papelbon would be the guy, but I do go back and forth on this some days, depending on like the health of Sanchez would change that. If I thought he was out for 2 months, I'd say a starter, but as things stand today, I'd say a back of the bullpen arm.
Yeah, I think that is the big X factor, isn't it? How long Sanchez is going to be out? Because if you know he's going to be out for a good chunk of time, then maybe your answers change, and it would be the starter that would be the number one priority.
Yeah, maybe Aaron Sanchez comes back soon and slots into the bullpen, and all of a sudden you don't need a bullpen arm anymore because Aaron Sanchez is at the back of your bullpen. Wouldn't that be crazy?
Wouldn't that be interesting? Because it would be a way to preserve that arm, too.
Wouldn't that be interesting? I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen, right? I know Alex Anthopoulos is working the phones right now. He's been on trade calls the last few days. Last night, he went down to see Matt Boyd pitch in Buffalo. Matt Boyd is another arm who could come up. He's a guy who's been dominating the minor leagues this year. Great numbers of AA, earned a promotion to AAA Buffalo. Had a nice outing last night for the Bisons. I mean, he just hasn't had a bad outing all year. He's been great, and he's kind of rocketed up prospect kind of top 10 lists and leaderboards just with what he's done. Nobody thought he was kind of one of those top prospect overwhelming arm guys, and the results this year have spoken for themselves. So he is a guy who could either A, maybe come in and fit into this rotation, maybe make a few starts for you, and then, you know, when Daniel Norris is ready, he shifts to the bullpen and he answers some problems for you there. Or B, maybe he's a trade piece because his value right now is exceedingly high. And I know that Alex Anthopoulos was in Buffalo watching him pitch last night.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be quite an X factor, though. I mean, or quite a coup for Alex Anthopoulos to maybe capture some lightning in a bottle with the Buffalo Bisons with Boyd. But I either as a trading piece or as someone that could help the Blue Jays right now, the big league club, right now, be it Norris, Boyd, what have you. Last night, C.B. Buckner, was this the C.B. Buckner show last night with the umpire C.B. Buckner? And because, you know, he tossed Gibby, and later yeah. on, you know, he would toss Osuna and DeMarlo Hale.
And,
I don't know about you guys, because you guys have spent a lot of time in the press boxes, but when I've worked games, when I've been at games where C.B. Buckner was going to be the umpire, the home plate umpire, a lot of people in the press box going, uh-oh, this might be a weird night. That happens a lot. And a lot of the broadcasters that I would talk to that would have said that off air wouldn't necessarily say that on air, but I will share that on air, that they've been saying that, and it would often come true. And I'm sure that was said last night going into the game, and it certainly was the case last night. C.B. Buckner, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of fireworks with the Orioles and Blue Jays in the past, and when Bautista was hit yesterday in the first inning, mm-hmm. maybe there was intent, maybe there wasn't, we don't know. We can imagine that that would have been the case, and certainly there would have been evidence based on history to support the theory, but nothing concrete. But Buckner warning both benches, both dugouts, that is. You think that was the right move? I mean, it certainly wasn't fair for the Toronto Blue Jays to have that happen.
I think that the system is broken. The warning system, of the whole thing is broken. Because here's how it plays out, right? Like, Jose Bautista gets hit in the first. C.B. Buckner warns both benches. John Gibbons comes out to say, well, why are we being warned? We right. didn't do any. What are you warning us for?
Yeah, we accidentally hit a guy, then we're thrown out.
C.B. Buckner says, John, you're delaying the game. You're disrupting this. You're gone. Gibby's gone. Eighth inning, Roberto Osuna hits Adam Jones. Because of the warnings, C.B. Buckner then has to toss Osuna and toss DeMarlo Hale,
yes.
who is the acting manager. So now the Blue Jays, who were hit first, have had three members of their team ejected, and the Orioles have had none.
Right.
When the hit batters are one for one, but the ejections are three to none. So I think that he, you know, C.B. Buckner is just kind of following the system. He's following the way that these things are done. But I mean, there's certainly no intent from Roberto Osuna in the eighth. Like, what, you're going to hit Adam Jones to bring Chris Davis to the plate as a tying run?
Yeah, to load the bases.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? In the eighth inning? Obviously right. not the intent. But because of those warnings, I mean, C.B. Buckner, I feel like, you know, felt that his hands were tied and he had to do that.
I thought Buckner was, he went into, I think Shai used the term in his piece, ump show mode. Right, I think there was a bit of that for sure. Buckner's reputation precedes himself.
Yeah,
but I also feel like the warnings, I was okay with the warnings in the first inning, just given the history. Everybody was talking about it coming in. I'm sure Buckner's reading everything. There's a brushback pitch. I didn't have a problem with it. The only thing I question is the ejection of Gibbons. I don't know what Gibbons said to warrant it, but I really have to wonder. Gibbons is pretty smart. I don't know Gibbons is going out in the first inning looking to get ejected. I'd be surprised if he said anything that was warranted of an ejection. That's the one that really surprised me, and that really put them behind the eight ball, because to Arden's point, okay, Gibbons is gone and now the warnings are out. So yeah. Hale, you're acting manager now, and for sure Osuna accidentally hit Jones. He does not want to hit him there, and now the Jays are really behind the eight ball with Tim Leeper taking over. No offense, Tim, but it was a bizarre situation. It was just the one call I questioned from Buckner all night was the ejection of Gibbons in the first inning. I'd be shocked if Gibbons said something that really warranted a suspension or an ejection in that case.
Well, and maybe it was the reputation that,
that's why I think
I
was okay with the warnings, given that things could have got out of hand in that game really early on. So I didn't have a problem with that. I did have a problem with the Gibbons ejection.
I don't understand warnings at all. What's the point? Like, if you're going to throw someone out, throw them out. Now you have been warned. Like, what? Like,
well,
what
I
is
guess,
this freaking grade school? That's one warning. Another, yeah, like, you're going to go have timeout.
We're going to have a timeout, exactly.
What, like,
imagine
what
there
doing?
Was an off-field warning, too, from the commissioner's office before the game. As I'm sure there were letters or phone calls just warning guys, like, hey, if there's any funny business, we're going to drop a hammer.
If someone intentionally throws someone out, else throw them out. What? That's it. You're not playing the
game.
I
guess it's at the
umpire's... You have 2 cores to throw them out.
Yeah, but I guess it's at the umpire's discretion, and especially with C.B. Buckner being the umpire yesterday. I mean, are you going to take what C.B. Buckner decides at face value, given his reputation?
And maybe Gibbons should know better than to come out on the field, like, given the reputation of the umpire.
But
he was jawing at Matt Wieters behind the plate in the first inning. The guy's hot already. Just in that situation, stay on the bench.
No, John Gibbons had every right to come out because his team got warned for doing nothing. His team was put in a position where if Marco Estrada wants to work inside, as he has to do, if an errant pitch, moves away and gets a batter, now all of a sudden your starter who's throwing a no-hitter is thrown out. for an errant pitch. So I think John Gibbons had every right to argue that.
He had every right to argue, but maybe in that case, knowing the umpire, discretion is the greater part of valor. Just stay on the bench. Like, he's walking into the Lions' den by stepping onto the field, given Buckner's reputation, how hot he is. Obviously, he's got a quick trigger finger. Again, he had a right to be upset, but maybe in that case...
Yeah, but the Blue Jays had three Orioles batters at the very least in the top of the first, in which to make a statement. If they wanted to hit somebody, they would have done that in the top of the first inning. Mm-hmm. Would logic dictate that?
Or maybe right after they took a big lead, right? Maybe that's when you do it. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. So, no.
And I don't think that the Blue Jays want to get into that. You know, like, I don't think they want it. Like, just talking to players even off the record, like, they thought it was over, right? Like, everybody thought this thing had, like, cooled off and passed by. There's a series in Baltimore about a month ago where nothing happened. They just played baseball. Like, everything was good and everything was fine. And, you know,
you're playing well. Just, you don't want that.
Right. And that's the thing, too. When you've won 14 and 16, like, you don't.
Blue Jays don't want this. No.
The Orioles loved it. Yeah. Oh, they loved it.
Sure. Especially visiting as well. Do we expect more fireworks today?
I don't know. We'll see. It's hard to say. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't have, but maybe.
I would expect tension, maybe not fireworks. Like, that game's going to, on both sides, the dugouts will be tense.
Does it add something from a fan perspective?
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it.
We're talking about it.
We're talking about it. I hate to say it because I'm a baseball purist and I love baseball. I don't need this stuff. But there is a part of me that tunes in more for this game this afternoon to see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, or if I'm not able to watch the game, I'm going to be watching the highlights on Sportsnet to see if anybody was hit, to see if there were any fireworks. So it is, a nice side thing.
What I think it is that any pitch, even an inside pitch that gets away all of a sudden now, like, I'm not even totally, totally convinced that Wright was trying to hit Bautista. Like, you know, they set up inside. It was a strange count to do it, a strange time to do it.
Yeah.
And it could have been just a pitch that got away. And this and Mike Wright's a guy who wasn't even on the Orioles when all this stuff was going down.
Whether or not he was instructed to do that or not.
Didn't Wright say
something
odd after the game? Didn't he say, we're pitching inside because he loves the ball away?
No, he said we're pitching inside because we have to pitch inside to Jose Bautista. Like, you have to keep him off the plate because stands on the plate.
Mets, the last series, all they did was pitch him away because they stopped coming inside to him because he was killing them.
And they walked him all day. So would you rather walk him all day or would you rather get him off the plate? And kind of, you know what I mean? Like, that's what you have to do to Bautista because Bautista wants to pitch on that inner half of the plate. So he stands there so that you know what I mean? Like, he moves up on the plate for it. So you almost have to brush him back. Sometimes that's just strategy against Jose Bautista. And Mike Wright came out and said, I wasn't trying to hit him.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't trying to do that. I believe him. I don't see why they would do that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens today. 12:30 broadcast start here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Jerry Howarth is returning because his voice is working now.
Doing a couple innings, right?
So I lent him my voice. So he's got my voice right now.
Jerry didn't want to go down to call a couple of games in Dunedin?
No, he didn't.
Get the pipes warm?
He's fine. So hopefully he's going to be doing a couple of innings. That's a plan anyway. So tune in for that. Orioles and Blue Jays, 12:30 along the Sportsnet Radio Network. And obviously you can watch it on Sportsnet as well. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. That's Mike Cormack and Arden Zwelling. I'm Jeff Sambit, sore throat and all. Last night, a big doings as Alex Rodriguez gets his 3,000th hit and hits it out of the ballpark. Now, here's what happened with me, guys, last night. I normally put my kid down at like 7 o'clock. He's one and change. And I normally put him down at 7 o'clock, but he was he was a little more awake last night. So I put him to bed like around 7:15. So I put him down at 7:10, 7:15, a little later than normal. I go downstairs, and by sheer luck, every time I put my Rogers digital box on, it's set to MLB Network because my kid loves baseball, and he's like, baseball now. Like, we've got to watch baseball as soon as humanly possible. No time to warm up the television and to change the channel. It needs to be on immediately. So I have it on MLB Network all the time. So I put the digital box on, I settle in, and the first visual I see is Justin Verlander throwing a pitch and Alex Rodriguez hitting it out. And I'm, the volume isn't up at this point, and I'm like, is this game live? Am I watching a highlight? Because there's a home run here. And wasn't A-Rod one away from 3,000? Did I just witness history in a matter of 2 seconds? Which I was, and I put the volume up. And as that happens as well, I see a buddy of mine catching the ball. It's Zach Hampel, who's an author on the subject of catching baseballs. He's caught over 8,000. In fact, just had him on the show a couple of nights ago. And he caught the ball. I mean, just by sheer coincidence, I'm able to catch this great moment in baseball history. And on top of that, my pal Zach is the one that caught the ball. He's going to join me at noon. And he's undecided as to whether or not he's going to give the ball back to the Yankees and to Alex Rodriguez and to Cooperstown, because, of course, as soon as he got the ball, Yankee security whisked him away. And they tried for a couple of hours negotiating with him to try to get the ball from him. And I know him. He wants to keep the ball. And he did want to keep the ball. And last night, he was adamant that he wanted to keep the ball. And there was nothing that the Yankees could offer him that would change his mind. And, you know, as of right now, he still has the ball. But he's starting to waver a little bit. You know, maybe, am I doing the wrong thing? What should I do? And it really is there a right thing? Is there a wrong thing? I don't know. It's a polarizing subject. But if you're Zach Hampler, we're going to take calls on this at noon with Zach, because he's undecided, and maybe we'll convince him one way or another through the phone calls we get and through the votes we get. But guys, Arden, we'll start with you. If you're Zach Hample, do you give Alex Rodriguez the ball?
I'd sell it for $1 bajillion. Yeah, that's too. The price.
I can't help it.
Yeah.
Give the ball to A-Rod? Come on.
Like, okay.
Give the ball to the Hall of Fame. Give the ball to the... No way.
All right, well, you've got the ball. What do you do with it?
I hold out for the... whether it's A-Rod or some collector, or I can't, the ball's worth way more to A-Rod than any collector.
What I would do is I also would not tell anybody that I had the ball. Like, the thing that he did was, like, he put it right on social media immediately. Look at me, I caught the ball. I wouldn't tell anybody. I'm gone. I'm so far away from that stadium. And then I send out a little quiet missive to the Yankees, like, hey, you know, I got that ball.
Yeah.
You know,
like, and maybe through the Yankees you could sell it or
something. Let's do this quietly. Let's do this under the table. Yeah. I'm not going to have all this spotlight on my decision of will he, won't he. I don't even tell anybody. I just quietly tell them, like, hey, look, I caught the ball. There's a marker on it that says this is the one. It's authenticated.
Yeah.
Let's talk here. Let's work through these back channels.
I'd love to know what that negotiating process is like. In the middle of a game, like, what's the room like? Do they take him into, like, the bowels of Yankee Stadium? Like, yeah, that's going to be awesome to hear, but also, too, does A-Rod even care? I wonder, A-Rod's such a weird dude. Like, does he even want that ball? How much would he be willing to pay? Like, I could see A-Rod offering, like, $20. Like, A-Rod's just a weird dude, right?
Okay, so last night, an article was written very quickly about this, and Zach was quoted, and here's what he said. He told reporters this. My intention all along, I've been imagining this scenario as a one in a million, was not to give it back. You know, just because the guy who got Jeter's 3,000th hit, a lot of people called him an idiot. A lot of people said that he was a wonderful person and extremely generous. And I really think that whatever you want to do with it is your choice. I think that someone like Derek Jeter or Alex Rodriguez, who has made $500 million in his career, doesn't really need a favor from a normal civilian and a fan like me. I don't know right now if I'm going to sell it. I mean, depending on what the Yankees could offer, I would consider giving it back. I'm not giving it back for, I don't plan to give it back for a chance to meet him and full autographed bats, because I don't collect bats. I collect baseballs. Just having this ball is so meaningful to me. I can't believe that I got it. And I do know, guys, that this means a lot to him to actually have the ball. He's a baseball collector. And I was thrilled for him last night, because I know he's genuinely excited as a baseball fan to have the ball. So for many people that would think that all of a sudden this is a big cash grab and a big spotlight for Zach, that might be part of it. But I know initially he's excited about having the ball.
I know he's your dude, right? Like, he's your guy. But this guy just loves himself so much, right?
He likes the spotlight.
Yeah.
He does. He'll admit that.
Very much enjoying the attention that is coming with this, right?
Like, he's an author. He loves coming on the radio.
And if I may quote the Million Dollar Man, everybody has a price. Come on, I mean, this ball has a price. I don't care how much of a baseball collector fan he is. There's a certain price where he's going to hand over that ball pretty quickly.
Oh, and we'll see, and maybe we'll find out. He's going to join us on maybe like 3 hours sleep, because he was blogging and stuff. He emailed me back at like 4 o'clock in the morning. I talked to him last night, but it was a brief conversation. Here's what a Yankee spokesperson had said. Saying, as far as we're concerned, we have done everything we could to engage this guy in some type of discussion about some type of exchange. He had none of anything we were saying. He wouldn't engage at all.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Which Zach actually disputes. He said, we talked like twice at length about negotiating for the ball. I just don't want to give it up. So
sounds like even the Yankees are fed up with this guy.
Well, yeah.
He just likes, you know what I mean? Like, he wants
to take it with a grain of salt. It's the Yankees.
And talk about a half-assed negotiation. If you're the Yankees, they're like, do they really want to be in that room negotiating on behalf of A-Rod and trying to get this ball? Like, that's
a piece of baseball history. It's an important piece of baseball history.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I just looked up, there's been 3 players in the history of baseball with 3,000 hits and 600 home runs.
So
Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, A-Rod.
None of them as reviled as A-Rod. It was different, though. Those other two are totally different cases.
So the Yankees organization is trying very hard to get a piece of baseball history.
For a guy that they're suing.
For a guy that they're suing, for a guy that they don't feel is marketable anymore. Really. Doesn't this kind
they
of
were
sound
sure
like,
we were marketing him last
like
night.
Back ass words?
They were marketing him last night.
On Twitter, they, sure mean, they were a bit of a
But
Twitter
I thought
campaign.
He wasn't marketable. I thought they weren't going to give him his promotional and marketable bonuses because right. he wasn't
amazing,
marketable anymore.
It's amazing what being a productive DH can do.
Yeah, all of a sudden he's hitting the ball and he's turned things around.
They need a happy A-Rod right now.
Yeah, all of a sudden the history
they're in contention. He's their second best hitter next to Mark Teixeira.
Yeah,
they need A-Rod happy and productive. That's what this comes down to.
It certainly is all what have you done for me lately business, isn't it? And the Yankees have certainly changed their tune with Alex Rodriguez. I'm going to have Zach Campbell on in about an hour and a half here on the Sportsnet Radio Network, and we'll invite you to call in as well, and you could weigh in on what Zach Campbell should do with Alex Rodriguez's ball. 3,000th hit that ended up being a home run. As we continue this hour on Sportsnet Magazine Live, we'll talk about the U.S. Open, mostly the course, because a lot of people are complaining about the course and about Tiger Woods. And I don't think Tiger Woods can necessarily blame the course for his production or lack thereof at the U.S. Open. But we'll discuss it as we continue Sportsnet Magazine Live with Mike Cormack and Arden Zwelling. I'm Jeff Sambit, the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Ben Nicholson-Smith.
At a glance, Mike Trout's Twitter account seems pretty bland. Lots of Philadelphia Eagles tweets, not much in the way of controversy. But look closely enough, and you'll see that the defending American League MVP follows 37 weather-related accounts. It's how he gets the latest from meteorologists, storm chasers, and breaking news services. It turns out that Mike Trout is a weather fanatic.
I just like, looking at different websites and just seeing... if we're going to get a bad storm or, it's going to be a light storm. I think it came from my dad. He's a big weather guy and just always follow the weather.
Trout even chats with some weather experts on Twitter. He shares photos, asks questions, and provides up-to-the-minute details while using hashtags like bonus snow. Yes, winter storms are his favorite. So much so that if Trout wasn't winning MVPs, he knows exactly what he'd be doing.
If you had to have another career, if you weren't a baseball player for whatever reason, you could be a meteorologist.
I'd definitely be a meteorologist, yeah, for sure.
For now, he'll have to settle for playing center field.
Here comes the rain again. That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine. Available on Next Issue or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones.
I don't know, it's borderline laughable at some of the greens and some of the pin positions when we're actually almost better off plugged in a bunker than being on top of a ridge back on the fourth. And it's pretty much like putting on broccoli as well. So it's, I don't know what to say other than that, really.
As someone that frequently golfs on broccoli, I take offense to that statement. Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Jeff Sambit, with Arden Zwelling, and Mike Cormack. Having some tea, guys. Does the voice sound better?
You still sound great.
Sound good?
Yeah. Charming.
Yeah, charming?
Yeah. It's going really well.
It's like a good late night voice, actually. Yeah.
I know. It works on late night, but here I am with the sun out, and I sound just creepy.
Anyway. Should you host in like a Love Line type of show, is what you're saying?
Well,
like
I did that a couple of nights ago.
And, you hosted a Love Line show a couple nights ago?
I attempted to on this radio station, and nobody wanted my sexual and love advice. Go figure. Nobody wanted my advice on that. So that was the voice of Henrik Stenson, obviously talking about the U.S. Open and the controversial course that is Chambers Bay, Tacoma, Washington. The way I look at that is it's an equal playing field. Everybody has to fight through that course. I don't think you'd look at it and say, well, the winner of that maybe gets an asterisk along with that victory given the course. But it's an equal playing field. What do you guys think of that? Mark, well, Mike, we'll start with you.
What I don't like about it is it takes the skill out of the equation and introduces all sorts of random luck. I mean, guys can't predict how putts are going to roll off of broccoli. And now broccoli was an interesting term, but I know what he means. It's patchy. It's rough. You're not going to get even rolls. And given the size of these greens and the undulations these guys are having to compete with, they're really just guessing. Like, that they're not making informed decisions on greens. Like, they're not trusting their reads, their lines. There's so much luck coming into it that it's really not allowing. Now, you look at the leaderboard, and Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed are two of the top 20 players in the world, and Jordan Spieth might be the best player in the world. He's at 5 under par. But if you go beyond the top 2-3 guys, there's a lot of no-names, could-bes, should-bes, would-bes, wannabes, might-never-bes. And it's kind of taken the luster, the sheen off this U.S. Open on a course that looks spectacular on TV. I mean, it's breathtaking in HD. I'm kind of like just glued to it. But just hear player after player coming out and ripping the greens. And it seems like there's a tidal wave of that coming out now. They were pretty quiet the first couple of days. I think the players, out of respect to the U.S. Open and to the course itself, they didn't want to rip it until they saw how it played for a couple of days. But now that they have, Ernie Els, Henrik Stenson, Sergio Garcia, all the big names are coming out and saying that this place is pretty much like a cow pasture.
If I'm a professional golfer, like, I want to play on the most picturesque, perfect golf course of all time. Like, I'm a pro. Like, I got, you know how hard I worked to get here, and you're going to make me play on this glorified hayfield right now? Are you kidding me? Nah, I ain't standing for that.
Suck it up.
You like that hot take?
Suck it up.
You like that one?
Come on.
I get the level playing field thing, but I mean, yeah, these are the pros. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's absurd. It's like playing like a World Cup on artificial turf.
Why are
what?
That would be insane.
Boom.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Boom.
Why are they choosing a course like this?
That's a great question. I think a lot of this comes down to that big word in sports, which is ego. And I wonder if the guys running the USGA and their current executive director, Mike Davis, has taken a lot of heat in golf media circles for coming to a course that is less than a decade old. Typically these courses, or sorry, these U.S. Open Championship venues are 100 years old or 50 years old.
Is it that new?
Yes, it's a brand
new
course.
Why is it so trash?
Well, a lot of it is
this
the weather.
This is a newer course?
This is a new course?
Yes, this is not a course that's been around for 100 years. This course is like a decade
here's
old.
Here's what we need, folks. Can we get more broccoli? Can we get more broccoli on the course?
Well, if you want another FIFA reference here, a lot of people, well, gee, well, how does a new course with not a lot of, history to it get a prestigious tournament like this so quickly, so soon, when there are so many other championship venues? There's literally like 30 championship venues they could go to.
So they spent all their money getting the tournament and none of the money in improving the
greens. Well, a lot of it is like the weather. Well, the U.S. Open, like, here's the thing. The U.S. Open could have turned this into like the greenest U.S. Open of all time if they wanted to with the water, but they want to have it firm and hard. They just got a little too smart for themselves, a little too cute. I think they went to this venue as opposed to, let's say, like a Pebble Beach or a Congressional or any other championship venue they've been to 100 times before, because they want to do something new and special, spectacular. It's also the first U.S. Open on Fox Sports. I'm sure Fox is thrilled with how visually this is going to look on TV. I think they swung for the fences, and it looks like right now they're striking out.
They want it to be sexy. Is what it is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, having all their golfers complaining about it, except for the ones that are in the lead, yeah. having golfers, their biggest stars complaining about the course. How much of a say do you think the stars are going to have here?
They have zero say.
So I mean, if they complain enough, or they can complain all they want, it's not going to be enough. Like,
no, the USGA wears this like a badge of honor. They love to hear the players complain about how difficult the course setup is. They love this.
Isn't that nuts? The players are the ones like breaking their wrists as they're trying to chip on concrete, right?
But here's the thing. They have to show up. It's the U.S. Open. They want to compete in it. Nobody's going to sit out a U.S. Open because they don't like the course.
They're going to take their chances.
They're going to take their chances.
What do I have to lose? I don't win this thing? Okay.
And then as soon as they fall out of contention, cough, Ernie Els, Sergio Garcia, then you'll start to hear the griping.
I see.
Is it at this course indefinitely, or what's the plan?
No, it's a rotation. So the USGA will pick their courses typically 5 years in advance, and I'd be surprised if they award one to Chambers Bay in the near, the distant future.
Well, I mean, but doesn't that contradict what you said a moment ago? Like, if they're hell bent on this course, it's kind of like
the golfers are
going to complain about it. Oh, we're going to go there even more.
The players are one thing, sure, but the media criticism is a whole nother thing. And I don't think they enjoy having the media rip their USGA officials for picking this course to begin with. So I think they were okay with the players griping it, as long as the media said, well, the players are being babies and, it looks beautiful. It's playing fairly. That's what they were hoping for. But it backfired because everybody's in agreement that the course is not playing fairly. As pretty as it looks, it's just been a bit of a train wreck.
So we're really just trying to make the media happy here. Screw the guys who actually have to play the golf.
If you're the USGA, yeah, you are. You're trying to make the media happy.
I don't mind that.
No,
that's a refreshing change.
What do we care? What do we matter?
We don't.
I'm sure the press box is just
Yeah, I'm sure the press box is great. Sure,
spectacular. What world are we living in where a writer who covers golf or something has more say than like a Jordan Spieth or whatever?
Right, sitting in his ivory tower in his press box, getting a pedicure, right? Eating, you know, freshly fluffed,
popcorn?
What do you fluff?
What,
souffle? I don't know why you'd mention
popcorn.
Because
there
popcorn.
Are some people that I know that cover sports
that would be
that just
up.
Love popcorn.
I have no idea.
Popcorn in every. Every pot, you know what I'm talking.
No,
Mike, you know
what
I'm
talking.
Too bad that we need
couldn't
a TV show right now.
Okay, so
a TV show would be awesome right now.
So a couple of days ago, I got to tell the story just as a quick sidetrack. All right, very quickly. A couple of nights ago, Arden joins me in Dan Riccio. We were doing a show together a couple of nights ago, and Arden was scheduled to join us about an hour after the Blue Jays broadcast. The ninth inning of that broadcast. That was the 8-0 game, right? Yeah, it was 8-0.
I don't know what you're talking about, so
well, no,
I couldn't
because
tell
you. Were paying attention
I have no
to the
idea.
Game. So it's an 8-0 game, and the camera pans over to the press box on Sportsnet's broadcast, and they say, oh, what a wonderful group of writers we've got on .ca and Sportsnet magazine. And they're absolutely right about that. And they show, you know, hardworking Shai Davidi that's looking at his computer. The shot contains about three or four writers. You know, Shai Davidi being one of them, and he's hard at work. He's trying to get that story in. Wants to get his words to his readers as quickly as humanly possible.
No time to eat for Shai.
No time. There's
forget
no time.
It.
I'm hard at work here. And there's a couple of other writers that are doing the same. And there's Arden Zwelling, I mean, just devouring a bag of popcorn. And I couldn't help myself that night. I was like, I have to talk to Popcorn Arden Zwelling.
I asked
about
if he went
that.
Full Costanza.
Oh, he did. Yeah. It he was open of a different kind. George Costanza eating a sundae, a hot fudge sundae. It was the equivalent. I couldn't help myself.
You guys just go one kernel, a couple kernels, and you're good.
Oh,
eh?
No.
You're done. Yep, that's
oh,
enough
no.
popcorn for me.
You in a movie theater, I'm sure you're just covered in popcorn by the end of the movie. So the popcorn.
There's nothing
well
else available in that press
There's
box
not.
Late in the game, right?
So
desperate times,
so
desperate
you're telling
measures.
Me, you're telling me that if Arden Zwelling, this guy over here, is covering golf, the people that run that sport, that run this tournament, are going to care more about popcorn Arden Zwelling than they are
money.
About Jordan Spieth.
They're going to have something better than popcorn. They better. This recent course, you kidding me? Yeah,
amazing.
I better be eating eggs, Benny, you know, just chilling.
Exactly, yeah.
Right?
Tiger Woods certainly can't blame the course for 16 over through the first couple of days here. And Michael Grange has a piece on sportsnet.ca about Tiger's decline being one of the biggest ever.
The biggest ever.
The biggest ever. I think he's right. I mean, I can't think of someone that has been that much, like dominated as much as he had, and then looks like this.
Grange had a great line in the piece where he said, you could have made the case that Tiger at his zenith in 2000, when he won the US Open by 15 shots and played golf at a level that nobody's ever played it at, was as good at golf as anyone was at anything else.
I think that's
fair. Think about it. Isn't that crazy?
It was Tiger, clearly. And then everybody else.
Have we seen an athlete in our lifetime dominate their sport to that degree? Not just for a one-off
so.
Tournament,
I mean,
but for an extended period of time, like a decade.
I mean,
and then not only that, to be that dominant, but then to turn around and become that poor at your sport. And now Tiger can't blame it on the injuries. He's been healthy for several months now. He's played several tournaments, and he is completely lost. We saw him top a three-wood from the fairway on 18. I can't remember if it was yesterday or Thursday. And Greg Norman in the broadcast booth for Fox was at a loss for words. Just, he didn't know what to say. It was just such a sad sight to
see. You can't believe what you're seeing.
Yeah, you can't believe it. He was literally at a loss for words.
Yeah. Arden, do we see an athlete like this? Because I could think of many athletes that I admired through the years, you know, towards the end of their career, last couple of years, they're just kind of a shadow of their former selves, but they're clinging. You know, they still feel like they can help a ball club or a hockey team or whatever. You know, you could see what they're adding, but they're not quite the same player. And you kind of want them to go away because you want to have those memories of greatness as opposed to those last couple of years where they look human. You know, with a Tiger Woods, should he have just like maybe packed it in and said, I'm not giving these people poor memories of myself. I want to walk away with, you know, maybe people still remembering what a great player I was.
Well, no, all this guy's done in his life is golf. It's the only thing he knows. If he doesn't have golf, he kind of ceases to exist. So I don't I don't think he would ever pack it in. I don't think that he should. I think that as long as he feels like he can play and compete, that he should. Why not? You know, obviously there's still interest.
Nobody can take away the success he's had in the past, right?
The most talked about, you know, unranked golfer, 100 and whatever ranked golfer in the world, right? So, I mean, like, obviously, like, there's still interest. There's still money to be made. why not? He's still sponsored. I mean, he's still, you know.
And even though he looks old, like he's 39, but he looks like he's 49. Which is amazing. And there's a lot of wear and tear in that body. Physically, he's been through a lot. And mentally, he's been through a lot, as we all know as well.
A lot of wear and tear on that.
But in
body.
Golf, yeah. 39 is basically 29 in every other sport. I mean, a lot of golfers reach their peak in their mid-30s. And even Vijay Singh, a guy who kept himself in great shape like Tiger does, won something like 20 times in his 40s. So Tiger has every reason to believe that if he sticks with it, works hard, and most importantly for him, stays healthy, there's a chance, given all that skill, it's there. Like, that skill never leaves you, you know, like form comes and goes, but, you know, class and talent are forever. If he just sticks it out over time, there's a good, I'd be shocked if Tiger doesn't win a tournament again. It's just what, it'll come down to how much he wants it, how hard he wants to work at it, and how much patience he has to suck.
Yeah.
At the level that he sucks right
I hope,
now.
I hope he has such a, like, career resurgence.
It'd be incredible.
Like, I hope he's terrible for, like, 5 years and then is the greatest golfer on the planet at 45 just crushes for, like, a decade.
And
like,
he could do it.
I hope that happens.
He could do it.
Really, that'd be great.
Slammed against the clock just, here, like, but that's what I wanted to bring up. Like, now do you feel people are rooting for him because now he's become the underdog?
I've always rooted for him. I love Tiger. And I hope that he does that and just throws it in everyone's faces, like, does a complete heel turn and becomes just an absolute douche and just, like, just throws it back in everyone's face. Mm. It's like, yeah, what up now?
I'm rooting for it. Tiger now, and I've always respected Tiger growing up. I was a huge golf fan growing up as a kid. I was just in awe of, like, his skill, but I never rooted for him because Tiger actually made golf a bit boring for me because he was so dominant.
Sure.
There was no drama after a while.
Sure.
So I wanted Tiger to be in the hunt, but I always wanted somebody else to push him and hopefully, like, beat him in the end. And that, sure enough, that happened for a while, but now it's flipped so far the other way that I think it would just be, like, one of the best stories ever to see him, like, pick himself out of the depths of despair here.
Certainly would.
And come back, and if he can win one more major, to just put himself back in the conversation.
And then go away.
Yeah,
no, and then just hand around, because now we've got some real intrigue. If Tiger can win one more major, and then everybody's like, well, if he's won one, maybe he can win three more in the next 10 years, and now, like, you got a story.
Become an ornery old man, like, just totally cynical and just, like, grumpy curmudgeon. I'd love it. I would love it.
Like, he's been a grumpy old man for 20 years.
Eat it up.
Like it or not, it would make for a great story. We'll have a look at the NHL as we continue Sportsnet Magazine Live, including some trade talks and whether or not Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf are going to be Toronto Maple Leafs throughout the offseason and into next year. I'm Jeff Samet with Arden Zwelling and Mike Cormack on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The top topics. The headiest headlines. Debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sore throat and all, I'm Jeff Samet.
Sounding better.
Reporting for duty.
Getting better.
It sounds You're better, doesn't it?
I swear it's getting better.
That's, like, Arden Zwelling, Mike Cormack.
It's gotten better since
Silent over there in the corner. Doesn't want to comment on my voice.
I'm just enjoying the voice.
He won't lie to you. He's not going to lie to you like I will. Yeah.
I can't compete with that.
You sound terrible. Just say it, Mike Cormack. Just say it. I know.
It is getting better, honestly.
My wife and my mom.
Can we hand this guy some Barry White lyrics or something? And just,
no kidding.
What, when you go home, do you just
go to work?
Do you just not talk, just to preserve the
That's
lyrics?
That's great. I don't have to talk at home. I just go, can't talk.
Sorry, can't talk.
Do FaceTime with the in-laws or something. I can't talk.
Sorry. Discussion. Yeah.
Gotta be quiet.
I'm going to go over here and drink 100 beers.
They don't ask me anything. I just, because what's the point? I get asked questions all the time. My wife asks me questions constantly. What do you think about this? What do you think? Does it matter? We're going to do what you want anyway.
Ooh.
Why is there a discussion?
Do you have a good nod system?
Just decide what we're doing. I go, yeah, all right.
Do I have a little talk about something, Jeff?
What do you think?
We got to work through something here?
It's marriage, Arden. That's how it goes for most people.
You're amongst friends here. It's okay.
Yeah, close personal friends right here. No, that's how it is. Ask questions. What are you asking me for? I'll give you my opinion. You'll weigh it. But really, we're going to do what you decide anyway.
She'll consider it.
Well, let's just do what you're going to do and be done with it.
She's just asking to be nice.
So this past week, this is day four of having, like, virtually no voice.
Yeah.
This is as good as I've sounded in 4 days. Some would say ever. And, you know, the last few days have been great because nobody's asked me my opinion on anything, and I don't really need to weigh in because are we going to buy that? Yes, we are going to buy that because you want to buy that, and that's the way it's going to go.
Oh, dear.
That's how it is.
What's the last big purchase?
Hallway carpet.
Oh, yeah? You need a hallway carpet.
Yeah, hallway carpet.
You got to have one.
So we bought it, and it doesn't matter what I think about it.
You're not going to have a carpetless hallway.
I happen to like it. But it really didn't matter.
You're not going to have a carpetless hallway. Come on now.
No, it could be a Boston Red Sox carpet. If she wants it, we're getting it.
Oh, wow.
That's the way. And you know how I feel about the Boston Red Sox.
Not a fan.
So that's how it goes. Now, how do we feel about Dion Phaneuf and Phil Kessel? As we talk the NHL offseason right now.
Speaking of carpets.
Speaking of.
Wow.
You know what? Can we end the show now? Doesn't get any better than that.
Where were you, popcorn?
Popcorn. I love it. LeBron versus Blatt. We're going to talk about that later on in the hour. Kessel, Phaneuf. I want to know where you guys stand because I'm of the opinion and have been since the season's ended, heck, even before. If the Leafs are true to this rebuild, they got to do it without Phaneuf. They got to do it without Kessel. They've got to turn the page. They've got to move on. For many reasons, for the fact that they're part of this core, or they are essentially the core of this team for the past couple of years, that change is swiftly needed. And, you know, from a financial standpoint, obviously they'd like to get out from underneath those contracts. You know, for whatever they give, and they do give something, it's not as if that there are a couple of players that have absolutely no value. That's not at all what I'm saying. And I really enjoy Phil Kessel on the ice when the effort is there. But this is a time right now where the Toronto Maple Leafs have to go with a complete rebuild. Arden, your thoughts on Kessel and Phaneuf?
We'll see. I don't know. I believe there's a plan. Brendan Shanahan and you know, whoever he hires doesn't even have a GM.
You trade players
if you don't have a GM.
He's got several people that are acting as a conglomerate.
I think it's a three-headed monster of Shanahan, Mark Hunter, and Kyle Dubas.
Yeah, Dubas, yeah.
But then you're going to bring another guy in? And
I don't know.
How are they going to operate that?
I think Dubas is going to be the GM in a couple of years. I think they're kind of grooming him for the role.
So they're going to get some,
how about that?
Some older, experienced GM for a couple
of
years?
I'm not saying this guy, but a guy like Rick Dudley, a guy who's been a GM and has kind of been in advisory roles and always seems to land in front office as somebody to just kind of, someone to groom and mentor Dubas. Mark Hunter could do a bit of that too, but they don't have anybody in there right now who has extensive experience as a GM at the National Hockey League level, which is a bit of an issue. But when it comes to Phaneuf and Kessel, I wonder if with Babcock now on board, given his track record with defensemen and the system he's going to employ, if they think that they still might be able to get the best hockey out of Dion Phaneuf in a Toronto Maple Leaf sweater, if they're able to bring in, this is a big if, I'm not the biggest Dion Phaneuf fan, but I wonder if this is what they're thinking, that if somebody can come in and take the captaincy off of Dion Phaneuf, Babcock could make that a bit of an easy sell, perhaps, that maybe they could redeem Dion and make him into like a stud top pairing defenseman with Babcock's system, with his tutelage. But Kessel is a guy I think they're more determined to move. I think they've kind of seen enough of Phil Kessel. I doubt that Brendan Shanahan likes it. What Kessel brings to them on the ice and, more importantly, like in the locker room. Shanahan's been very tough on guys in terms of how they behave with the media, how they behave with their teammates, showing up on time. He was really upset about the stick incident, and by all accounts, that was Phil Kessel's suggestion to Dion Phaneuf. So I think Kessel's the more likely of the two to move at the draft. I'm not so sure about Phaneuf. If they can move both of them and they get pieces that help the rebuild 100%, I just think they're more determined to move Kessel than they are Phaneuf at this point, but what do I know?
See, then that's what I was afraid of with the whole Babcock hiring was, we got the best possible head coach that's available that's out there. So that changes our mind as far as this rebuild goes. That's what I was afraid of. And Mike, as you were saying that about Dion Phaneuf and maybe the belief.
You can still rebuild with Dion, though.
But financially.
How old is Dion? He's 31 years old?
He's not an old man or anything like that, but still financially, I'd just rather that money was free, you know, for the Toronto Maple Leafs to play.
But here's the thing too, though. If they have a good year with Dion and Dion plays his best hockey under Mike Babcock for a year, his value is even greater next offseason.
Well, that's a good point.
Or at the trade deadline.
But can a player like that be dealt midseason? Can a player
he almost
like
was
that
this year? He almost went to Detroit this trade deadline.
In the salary cap world?
Sure.
Yeah. But
sure.
It didn't happen.
It didn't, but it
but
could
that,
have.
But that
it
wasn't because
have.
Of financials,
that
really.
Was, yeah.
That was because the Red Wings didn't want to part with Manning.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it could happen. I don't know. I mean,
would the Red Wings have dealt for Dion Phaneuf last February or March if Mike Babcock didn't want him? Don't you think Ken Holland would have turned to Mike Babcock and said, what do you think about Dion Phaneuf? Do you think that guy can play for you?
I don't think they're going to strong-arm Babcock into
So I think that says something in itself.
I think Mike Babcock came to Toronto specifically to coach Dion Phaneuf.
Are you
That's
kidding?
That's why he came to Toronto.
Are you kidding?
He's like, wherever Dion is, I am going.
Popcorn, are you kidding?
I'm going there.
Oh, really? So Dion Phaneuf is traded to, you know, insert name of team here, and Mike Babcock is going there.
Dion Phaneuf could go play in Germany, and Mike Babcock
is
going.
Mike Babcock
I'm going. I need to coach this man,
in Germany.
This prodigious talent. Boy.
I hope that's not the case. Based on last year and salute gate or non-salute gate and everything, like everything that went down, just all the stink from last year, just based on that, don't you think that there was enough of that stink where the Leafs have to move on without Kessel and Phaneuf?
They've massacred their front office, right, is the thing. And they cleared out all the coaches, and they, you know, it's even down to like the scouting department. They pushed all those guys overboard, right? So it would make sense that, like, if you're going to do that in the front office and the coaching staff and throughout the organization, then you would do that with the personnel as well, with the on ice product.
Yeah.
Who knows? I imagine that, you know, when you get Mike Babcock and Brendan Shanahan, that's how those names go. When you get them up there on the podium saying, this is going to hurt, like, this is going to be bad for a few years, like, we're going to stink for a few years and then we're going to be good. You'd imagine that means that you sell off your high priced assets and you get young and you get cheap and you get, you know, controllable, to use a baseball term. And you move forward and you try to build this thing. So I don't know if you're building for 3 to 5 years down the line, is Dion Phaneuf a part of that? Is Phil Kessel a part of that? I don't know.
Some have said that the asking price for Phil Kessel to this point has been too high. And I would hope that's the case, given that the draft hasn't come yet. Because I think if a deal does happen, it's going to be in and around the draft, which is
for sure
about a week from now.
And teams are going to get antsy when it comes Friday night. Those draft picks are going to have to be called. And it's a very deep draft. A lot of teams like certain players. There's a lot of uncertainty after the top two picks. Who's going to go third? Is it going to be Hanifin, Strome? There's a lot of defensemen available. It's going to be a really wild draft. I think there's going to be a ton of activity, trade activity, not just with picks, but with players. I think that's likely where Phaneuf or Kessel are going to move. Who knows what other big names might go. And we're talking about this a bit off here before the show, but the trade deadline, especially this draft, has kind of usurped the NHL trade deadline in terms of interest and that one day where you feel like all hell's going to break loose player management-wise, and there's going to be tons of transactions. And just because of the salary cap era, you don't see those big contracts move at the deadline. You talked about Phaneuf earlier and how that deal didn't happen, and it wasn't for financial reasons, but... Yeah. He's more likely to move in a summer when teams can move the money around. Now, there's free agents that are available. Teams have until September 1st, whenever the season starts, I believe, in order to get their salary lined up under the cap. So I think we're going to see a really wild NHL draft this year, and it's going to way surpass the interest of certainly like this past trade deadline, but even like the past three or four before that.
Yeah, you feel that way, Arden, that draft day is kind of the new trade deadline day?
Yes, and I feel like you should watch it on Sportsnet.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Brought to you by Sportsnet.
Yeah, no, I do. I think that it's kind of a bit. But I think that, like, honestly, like, GMs need to get away from these like days where they make these massive errors and mistakes, and they get all like caught.
No, they don't.
And...
We need that, Arden. We need those massive mistakes all happening on one day.
We don't need them here in Toronto, or do we?
Right? Like,
I think we've seen enough of those.
You know what I mean? I feel like if you were a shrewd general manager, maybe you try to operate in times when people aren't expecting you to, you know? Maybe that's how, I don't know.
What about the report that that Phil Kessel would be open to joining the Montreal Canadiens? Because he's got a limited no-trade clause, and that would be one of the teams that he'd go to. You know, like a longtime Toronto Maple Leaf. Like we saw with Josh Georges one time and didn't want to go to the Toronto Maple Leafs in a deal. Ended up with the Buffalo Sabres. And he didn't want to go there just because he got used to hating the Toronto Maple Leafs as a member of the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, I'm not a Habs fan or anything, but there was a part of me that was like, okay, good. The rivalry matters to those guys too. And there is a little part of me, and look, I could see from Phil Kessel's perspective, you know, maybe he'd look at the Montreal Canadiens organization and say, I've heard great things. Everybody that I know has played for the organization, loves being there. Why wouldn't I want to go there? It's a team where I think that I can help. That I would fit in.
He would be a complimentary piece.
Yeah, exactly. He'd be insulated with that club. He likes the city when he goes there. So I don't begrudge a player from wanting to go anywhere. But there is a little part of me that, you know, given that Phil Kessel is a Toronto Maple Leaf and a big piece of the Toronto Maple Leafs, there is a little part of me that wishes I had heard the same thing out of Phil Kessel. And this is assuming all this is even true. that Phil Kessel would say, no way I'd want to go to the Montreal Canadiens because I hate that club. Just maybe it's the Torontonian in me and the guy that watches the Leafs all the time that kind of wanted to see that happen.
I don't know if a guy who skates 10 times maybe all summer is going to be that passionate about any team, like where he's going to go play.
Well,
like,
I was going to say, Phil Kessel's not a guy who plays with that kind of passion and that kind of intensity, right? Like that's not his game.
Not his style.
No.
An intense guy.
And he's an incredibly skilled player, honestly. Like, when he's on, like, he's one of the best players in the National Hockey League. Like, he's incredibly skilled, but he's certainly not, like, that passionate, you know, gritty, intense guy. So I don't think that would matter to him. I think for your, like, modern NHL player, like, going to a good organization is important. Going for an organization that isn't going to screw you around, you know what I mean, that's going to be loyal to you and honest and upfront, I think that carries a lot of weight with guys. And so they see how other organizations treat other players and some of, you know, the things that go down and you hear kind of whispers throughout the league and stuff like this. This happens in every sport.
Sure.
I think that's very, very important, more so than any kind of rivalries.
That's Arden Zwelling and Mike Cormack on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Jeff Sambit at Sportsnet Magazine Live. The draft being next week, you know, as far as the Leafs and who their focus should be with the fourth overall pick. It's a good pick. I mean, it's not Connor McDavid. It's not Jack Eichel, but it certainly is a deep draft. The Toronto Maple Leafs are going to get a talent with the number four pick overall. Is there someone, guys, that you have your sights set on more than any other with the Leafs pick, or are you just looking at, hey, one way or another, the Leafs are going to acquire talent through this draft? You know, get the best player available. The cupboards are so bare right now. We're rebuilding. Let's just get anybody we can. I mean, that's a perspective I have. And just hearing about the possibility of the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, entertaining ideas of trading that fourth pick overall to get more picks out of it. I mean, it's all about stockpiling at this point. For me, that was music to my ears.
Yeah, I have no idea what the Leafs are going to do with this draft. I don't think they even know. I think they have multiple scenarios simply because it's such a deep draft even after number two, and they're going to pick fourth. And everything's going to really depend on what Arizona does with that number three pick. Are they going to take Noah Hanifin, the defenseman from Boston College, Dylan Strome, the Erie Otter center? The Leafs are going to take the best player available, but I think the Leafs would also love to get a second first rounder, maybe even move up to number five. They've got assets they can move. I think there's going to be so much in play with the Leafs. It'd be really fascinating to know what's going on in that front office, not just now, but on draft night at the table. I really don't know. Like, the mock drafts have been everywhere. Damian Cox had them taking defenseman Ivan Provorov in his latest one. We've got three more mock drafts coming up on sports.ca on Monday from Garrett Joyce, Jeff Merrick, and Sam Cosentino. I wouldn't be surprised if all three of them had the Leafs taking a different player. It's that much of a crapshoot this draft. So it's really going to be fascinating. But like you said, they're going to get a player. They're going to get a real talent. I think, to your point, speaking on the rebuild, they'd love to get another player in that top 10 if they can. They have pieces to move. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they made a deal to get another pick in that top 10. But beyond who they, in terms of who they take, I really have no idea. They're just going to take the best player on the board.
Well, and maybe a deal is made after the third pick is announced. Like, maybe it'll come down that close where you could say, all right, Dylan Strome wasn't taken. Well, that's the guy I want. And maybe there's going to be a team that says, I want Dylan Strome and I want the Leafs pick so I could get Dylan Strome. I mean, if I'm the Leafs, I would want to get Dylan Strome. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if Dylan Strome is available, if you know that, if you know the Coyotes are not drafting Dylan Strome, and maybe it comes down to just after that announcement. I mean, all eyes should be on the Toronto Maple Leafs draft table because you might have a few GMs running over there saying, all right, let's talk.
Well, the Leafs are open for business. We know that. So it's everybody's going to be calling Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think it might come down to the wire there, Arden, as far as maybe some kind of a trade where, you know, the pick is announced by the Arizona Coyotes and then, you know, that Brian Shanahan and the rest of the group are really going to take their time with that pick?
Who knows? I'm all for mayhem and anarchy. So let's, hopefully it's just
it'd be great to see
a mess. Who knows?
Buyout window is open now. It took about 48 hours, well, exactly 48 hours after the Stanley Cup was awarded. In fact, we were doing a show that night when we kicked off the show. I was like, okay, we're an hour in, we're waiting for buyouts here. Is there anybody that's out there? And the answer could very well be no, given where the Toronto Maple Leafs are right now, as far as their organization is concerned, the rebuild phase, that is. Is there a possible buyout candidate that you've got your sights set on that you're looking around in the NHL and saying, well, you have to figure that whatever team is going to buy that guy out, and I'd like the Leafs to take a chance on him. Again, the answer could be no. And maybe it's part of a bigger conversation of, if I'm the Leafs, I don't go that route in acquiring talent, because that's where I stand right now. I don't want them taking a chance on a player that like a Cody Hodgson, or you know, maybe the Buffalo Sabres would buy out, as young as he is. I don't want the Leafs really taking a chance on anybody. I want to see the youngsters that they've got in the organization.
Yeah, the Leafs are going to go young, and they really want to get some cap space for sure. I think that's what they're going to be looking for if they're going to move Phaneuf and Kessel. They don't want to take on any big money. Obviously, they've done that a bit, moving the Clarkson deal and getting back Nathan Horton. Flexibility into the future is going to be key. What's really interesting, speaking about that future, is I think this kind of flew under the radar a little bit, was Steve Yzerman speaking to the media after the Lightning were eliminated from the playoffs or the Stanley Cup final, talking about how their number one offseason priority is signing Steven Stamkos. And Stamkos has talked a good game, but it's going to be really interesting to see if he signs on the dotted line. And I think if he doesn't, and there's a little bit of a game of chicken between the Lightning, Stamkos, and the Leafs will have to, I think, some of their offseason decisions, if Stamkos signs really quickly, they can then move on and say, well, we're not going to have X amount of cap space available for Stamkos next summer. We can maybe absorb a little bit of extra salary that we don't need to pursue him. But if that drags on into the summer, I think the Leafs would love to have a little bit of extra cash in their back pocket in the event that they're able to take a run at him.
That's interesting that at least preparing for the possibility of Steven Stamkos. What do you think, Arden? Do you think the Leafs, one, take a chance at Steven Stamkos should he be available? And two, is that a realistic dream of theirs?
It's so interesting to hear all these like pie in the sky scenarios people come up with, right? People say the same stuff.
Like Mike Babcock coming to the Maple Leafs?
There was a window where I didn't think Babcock at all was coming to Toronto.
Like Roger Clemens signing with the Blue Jays. Things happen.
People say the same thing about like John Tavares, right? Like, oh, he's from here. You know, he's just waiting for, you know, it's like the Andrew Wiggins thing, right? Like, oh, they're going to come to Toronto, you know? Like, right? Like, yeah, I don't know. Let's go. Yeah, go get Crosby. Hey, go get Tavares. Like, just go get them all. Yeah.
If Wiggins could have, he would have. If Wiggins was a free agent, could have signed with any NBA team coming out of college, where would he have gone?
I don't know.
Well, sure.
I'm not Andrew Wiggins.
You're not. I've been calling you Andrew Wiggins all show.
What am I doing here if I'm Andrew Wiggins?
I thought you guys were like kindred spirits. I mean, it's so similar in every way, like the raw athleticism. And
see, the thing
is, well, certainly that. Like certainly. Looking at the good looks, like certainly.
Looking at an Andrew Wiggins, it may be like John Tavares, as he went to the Islanders, was drafted to the Islanders. The way I look at young kids that have been from around here that maybe one day would have looked to wanted to have played for their Toronto team, I look at it as, okay, so Andrew Wiggins goes to Minnesota. He might go to Minnesota and, you know, after 3 years of being there, go or 4 years, whatever it is, look at it and go, I love it here. This organization treats me great. This is home to me now. This is where I want to be. And that could very well happen. And I think the same thing has happened with Stamkos in Tampa.
People get the strangest like ideas about young athletes and how, oh, of course they'd want to play at home. Why would they? Like, why would you want to like show up every day and have those expectations of being the hometown kid, right? And having to perform. And you go through, look at what happened to Dalton Pompey, right? Like you go through a slump or things aren't going well, everyone gets on you. You got all this pressure from the home. Every day you show up to work and some, you know, bupkis wants to talk to you about, oh, you're from here. Like, how about this? Wants to ask you the same questions every friggin'
day. Should have asked him a different question, maybe.
It's like going away to college, right? Like when you've grown up one place for 18, 19 years, right? So you grew up in Toronto. You want to get out. You want to go to Western.
Kind
you want
like
to go
LeBron
to
LeBron going to Miami,
right?
Yes. Like those were kind of his college years. Right?
You want to go to UBC.
Where did LeBron go to after Miami? I can't remember. He went back home.
He did.
All right.
What,
yeah.
Just like Stamkos would?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, you want
his college years. Yeah,
I'm saying it's nice to get away, and it's nice to go in and be somewhere else and do something else. Like, who wants to stay in one place forever?
Yeah, I mean, being from here, and I've always been here. But being from here, I like to think that if I were like an NHL player, and you know, I'd want to win a Stanley Cup in Toronto.
Also,
I'd want to go through everything that you need to go through, and then eventually get there and have an opportunity.
To Arden's point, I totally agree that Dalton Pompey was ill-equipped. Obviously, much of it is age. He's a nice kid. Everybody's rooting for him. He's a talented, he's a legit major leaguer. But there was too much put on him too soon in this market. He's too hard on himself at this age. The Jays shouldn't have thrown him into the fire as much as they did. He was fine. Sure, he earned a promotion last year. But to basically have him anointed as a starting center fielder, I thought was a bit unfair on the kid. They didn't have any major league caliber backups behind him. They were just in that situation. And it was too much for him. He became overwhelmed by it. But Let's look at Russell Martin. Russell Martin comes into town, and let's look at all the hoopla that surrounded his arrival. Some guys can handle that. They embrace it. They want it. They're that competitive. They want that challenge. They want to be that guy that fans turn to 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now and say, that's the guy that brought us the championship into this town.
Yes.
Right? Look at the way Joe Carter's revered Robbie Alomar. Oh, sure. You're a god for life in town if you bring a championship here.
Yeah.
Some guys want that. Russell Martin wanted that. I just wonder if a guy like Steven Stamkos, as competitive as he is, that might be an attractive possibility for him. Mike Babcock's here. There's a good ownership structure in place. He's got a great thing in Tampa Bay, no doubt about it. It's a beautiful place to live. He's got Steve Yzerman, one of the best GMs in the world. He's got a great roster in front of him. I wouldn't say he's foolish if he wanted to leave, but I would understand it if he wanted to leave to come home and pursue something greater.
If I'm him, I want to play in Tampa Bay or Arizona, some southern United States like place. Weather's nice. Expectations are low. Yep. Nobody cares. They actually win down there, which is what teams this market don't do. Everything's great down there. I mean, I totally want to go to live.
Treated like a god.
Some guys everyone loves you.
Some guys want the heat. They want the challenge. They want the ultimate.
No, no challenges for me, please. Something just as cushy as possible.
Hey, that's why you're here. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live, and we mentioned LeBron. And as we continue this hour, we're going to look at LeBron versus his head coach, David Blatt. Is there too much being made of that storyline? Was Coach Blatt mistreated by LeBron James? So we'll look into that on Sportsnet Magazine Live with Arden Zwelling and Mike Cormack. I'm Jeff Salmon on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Want to know what it's really like to win and lose the Stanley Cup? The latest free digital special edition of Sportsnet Magazine takes readers inside Chicago's historic Stanley Cup victory like no one else. Here's Christina Rutherford.
When he's 5 or 6 vodkas deep at a wedding, Blackhawks winger Christopher Steig will take on the role of wedding singer. And his song list is solid. Prince, Journey, Usher, you name it. If it's raining hard, Duncan Keith will offer you his jacket. And no, the Conn Smythe winner and now 3-time Stanley Cup champion has never run a marathon. But he probably should.
In on Garrison, stops, hits the trainer. Keith shoots the save, rebound, Keith scores! Second period, first goal, Duncan Keith, Chicago leads.
Keith played more minutes than anyone in the Stanley Cup final, and somehow he didn't look tired. Patrick Kane's barber was on vacation in Italy during the final, so if number 88 needed a touch-up on that sweet mullet with the racing stripes, he had to go see the barber's dad. Brendan Morrow, the Lightning's elder statesman, says the Russians on the team shower and then they sauna. It confuses him. Why sweat when you just got clean? Tampa lost. The Blackhawks won their first cup at home in more than 70 years. Jonathan Taves, Captain Serious, even smiled when it was all over. And he smiled a lot. And during the celebration, Duncan Keith's 2-year-old son peed all over his grandpa's jersey. Can you blame him? The kid was excited.
Sportsnet Magazine's digital special includes 100-plus photos and videos and is available free to anyone who downloads the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows devices.
Clay Thompson? Yup. Splash Brothers? Yup. Cavaliers? Nope. We won? Yeah. They suck? Yeah. We here? Yeah. They not? No.
Thank you, Draymond.
I'm picking up good vibration.
I really have no idea what Draymond Green is talking about there, but he's celebrating his Golden State Warriors victory. Is he referencing a song or something?
I know. I thought it was Mitch Williams and Lonnie Dykstra at first.
Yeah.
He's turnt.
I couldn't make it out.
Those two hate each other.
He's turnt right up. Just turnt.
Yeah. So there's Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors enjoying the parade that was with his club winning a championship for the first time in a billion years. That's Arden Zwelling and Mike Cormack. I'm Jeff Salmon. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network. the final installment of this week's Sportsnet Magazine Live. Stick around. I'll be here until 12:22-ish. Bad voice and all, sore throat and all. Zach Hampel is going to join me. He's the guy that caught the home run ball. Alex Rodriguez, 3,000th hit from last night. Doesn't know whether or not he's going to keep the ball. So I haven't told him, but I'm going to invite you to call in. And will you guys let him know what he should do with the ball? Give it back or sell it or keep it or what? So we'll get you to talk to Zach.
Could get some really good answers there.
Yeah, I mean, he wants...
What do you want from A-Rod?
He wants some creative feedback on Twitter and everything. And I haven't told him we're going to take calls, but we're going to do it. He's going to be fine with it, so don't worry about it. So you get to tell him what you think. We played the Draymond Green off the top, and you know, the Warriors won. The Cavs didn't. And some of the storyline this past week has been about Coach David Blatt and his relationship with his big star, LeBron James. And we were talking about it before the show got going. And, you know, LeBron is anything and everything with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, he's essentially running that team. Whatever happens with the Cleveland Cavaliers goes through their star player, which is a unique
including plays.
Yeah. Including plays. And that's something that had happened in these playoffs where a play was drawn up in which Coach Blatt, you know, with the game on the line, had LeBron inbounding, which I don't really get. But anyway, LeBron was like, no, that's not happening. It didn't. And he got the game-winning shot, scored the game-winning shot. But LeBron afterwards outlining the thought process that had gone, and you know, we shouldn't know all that. We shouldn't know that a coach had drawn up a plan that would not have worked or that did not go through, that LeBron wouldn't let that happen. It's not something. So that is just one example of, you know, maybe LeBron disrespecting his head coach, and it certainly has fueled the fire, especially now with the Cavs losing in the NBA final, of the big star not getting along with the head coach.
Yeah, if anybody hasn't seen it yet, they should definitely check out Mark Stein's piece on ESPN.com. The headline is LeBron's handling of Blatt unbecoming. It really is kind of a blow-by-blow account of the unraveling. Not the unraveling, but just a blow-by-blow account of what LeBron's relationship with Blatt was like during the finals. Stein was courtside for ESPN Radio, so he really had literally a front-row seat to everything that was going on, and he documents it in his piece. And really what he gets at is he talks about how great LeBron was in the final. We saw him take his game to another level. His individual performance was incredible. And then he also says, quote, "And likewise, we saw LeBron emasculate Blatt in ways that are simply unbecoming of a player of James legend in the making stature." Wow. Right. Basically saying LeBron was doing things that we never saw Magic Johnson do, Michael Jordan do. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, Magic Johnson had Pat Riley, Michael Jordan had Phil Jackson at his side. Yeah. So the point being, regardless of who LeBron's coach is, he shouldn't publicly embarrass him, emasculate him to the degree that he did. And it's left kind of an unseemly taste in some people's mouths regarding LeBron's performance in the finals. We all agree he was incredible. We've never seen him play at that level before. But it just raises that kind of, I don't know, ugly question about LeBron's character again. I mean, obviously he's redeemed himself a lot by going back to Cleveland, but there was the decision. He's looked a bit childish at times. He was boasting throughout the playoffs that he's the greatest player in the world. LeBron, by the way, we know that. Don't worry about it. You don't have to remind us every 2 seconds.
Yeah, I didn't have to tell everybody. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and like we're all kind of squinting our faces here as we're talking about it because it's just kind of like, LeBron, why did you have to do this? Yeah. Everybody's loving you, you know, your teammates, the city's loving this. And now we're talking about something unsavory when really what we should be doing is talking about what an incredible series LeBron had and how Cleveland's going to retool over the summer to get back to the finals.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
I agree with you on that and that point from earlier about, you know, you didn't have to say that he's the greatest player on earth or, you know,
why not?
Or whatever. I know.
Why not?
Oh, because
he's the greatest player in the world.
It's not something that needs to be said. It's,
why not?
I compare
he's
it to that.
He's that confident.
He's that confident. I think you need a bit of that. I think you need a bit of ego, but with that role. But I compare it to that, you know, like the person that gives himself a nickname. Do you have to give yourself a nickname? Really?
Yeah. But he's stating a fact. If you are the greatest, like he's the only guy in the world who can say that. So why not say it?
He states his fact on the court every night.
Why does he need to say it?
Doesn't need to say it.
He doesn't need to say it, but he did.
But he did.
Well, what was the point? If you're LeBron James,
somebody asked him a question. Why are you confident that you're going to win? I'm confident because I'm the greatest player in the world.
I would think that it's not going to come across it's not going to be received well. But I'll tell you, Arden, there's many people that feel the way you do.
Yeah.
That, well, he should say it. He is the greatest.
Why not? He is. And every day he has to get on that podium. Every day he has to go and talk to these dudes who were like, why are you losing? Why isn't your team doing this? Da, 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 right? And every day he says, oh, I let my play on the court speak for itself. And nobody says anything on the 99 out of 100 days that he says that. And then one day he says he's the greatest player in the world because he is, and everyone jumps all over him. Why?
See, well, now let me ask you this. Are you the type of person, because I'm not, like, if you score a touchdown, you get in the end zone, I'm not one to want a celebration.
Right.
Put the ball down, hand the ball to the referee, whatever, and get back to the sidelines and, you know, get ready for the next set.
All the touchdowns you've scored.
Well, no, I'm not saying I do it. I'm just saying that I don't need to see, you know, the wide receiver do that or whoever. Would you be of the
I think Arden's of the Randy Mosses of the world. I could see Arden just, you know, Arden's going to own that celebration dance.
I don't think that we've ever known what it feels like to do something that incredible. To hit a home run in front of, like, you know what I mean, in the World Series. To score a touchdown, to dunk on somebody in front of, like, tens of thousands of people. Just, you know what I mean, just loving everything that you're doing. To dominate your sport to that level.
Yeah.
We don't know what that feels like. And to say that, oh, you shouldn't celebrate.
Speak for yourself,
you shouldn't
Arden.
Celebrate I this incredible thing that you've
in
done.
In high school, I was quite an athlete. Speak for yourself. That's all I'm saying. No, I get that. I get that.
I do feel for LeBron in one sense in that so much is put on him, and as great as he is on the court, some people are always looking for a reason to criticize him. That whether it was the decision or, you know, his quote here in the NBA Finals, people are always going to be looking to, like, knock him down a peg. And I'm not anti LeBron.
Me neither.
LeBron's a great player. I just wanted to have the focus be on his play. I guess that's my disappointment. Like, I just want to talk about his play. It was so good.
Yes.
It was such a great story.
And it tainted it for me.
And what was great was the narrative of the first, you know, five games of the finals was, oh my God, LeBron James is carrying this team on his back. How much greater can he be, or how much greater does he have to be in order to win this series? And I think it's always amazing when sports is at its best when we're talking about what's happening on the court between the lines. And I just wish it kept to that.
I'm giving you a finger point. Like, you are absolutely right.
You're the guys who are just saying he shouldn't say he's the greatest, though. That's not happening in between the lines.
No, but I just said I wish we kept the narrative,
keep
the conversation
out.
To
oh, he
the
shouldn't
stuff
talk.
That happens.
So
no, not that he shouldn't talk. I just
but you guys were just criticizing him. You were just criticizing him for saying it. You said,
yeah,
LeBron, we don't need to
yes,
hear that.
Yes, but our what we're saying is the conversation should always be about what's on the court, what's on the field,
and
as opposed to what was said off the court or that sort of thing. That's where we're coming from.
He's the greatest. He is. And if you're the greatest, you should be able to say you're the greatest.
Well, you don't,
can get a tattoo,
don't see me
saying
everybody
here.
Loves Muhammad Ali. How much trash did Muhammad Ali, how many times did Muhammad Ali say, I'm the greatest?
Well,
he said 10 times
well,
a day,
the,
right?
The
and everybody
with,
loves that.
The thing with Muhammad Ali was, I think it was an intimidation sport where you get into the ring with somebody else.
Right.
And if you could have that mental edge, a one-on-one fighting with a person, you want to have that mental edge, and Muhammad Ali was trying to achieve that.
Well, I think it's the same in basketball. I think it's the same everywhere.
Well,
every
it's a bit of it's a team sport.
Arden, are you okay with LeBron's handling?
And LeBron was that team, though. Really,
it's a good comparison. It's a good comparison.
You know what I mean? Like, without LeBron, like, where is that team? Right? You know, like, Kevin Love hurt, Kyrie Irving hurt. I mean, you know, LeBron carried that team, right? And he carried them as far as he could get, and then Golden State won. Basically, I'm the greatest.
We all agree. Arden, do you have any issue with how LeBron is reported to have treated David Blatt throughout the finals?
I think
did he cross any lines?
I feel bad for David Blatt. I have some empathy and some sympathy for the man. This is a guy who, like, tore up the Israeli leagues, right? Like, this is a great man who's accomplished a lot and then comes over here and gets kind of punked by, you know, by a guy making so much more money than
and,
him.
And that's all we're talking about is, like, did LeBron cross a line here in his treatment of Blatt through
yeah.
the finals?
Now, LeBron is such a massive, massive star. Is there a head coach that's out there? Let's say Blatt's gone. Is there a head coach that could come in there that could coach LeBron in this capacity with this club? I mean, we look at, you know, Spoelstra with the Miami Heat. Obviously, there was success there. Because they won there.
There were also issues with LeBron and Spoelstra.
Okay, so there you go. But at least in the end, they won. But LeBron also was part of a big three there that was successful. And, you know, we look at Kyrie and Kevin Love, but this wasn't exactly the equivalent of having Bosch and Wade there. But is there someone that is out there that the Cleveland Cavaliers could bring in that would fit in? I guess it would have to be somebody that LeBron completely turns his key on. Maybe even is the one that LeBron goes to his owner and says, that's the guy. I want that guy coaching my team.
I think Dan Gilbert has to go to LeBron and say, look, LeBron, are you...
What do you want?
How's this going to play? What do you... Exactly. What do you want? because we can't have this happening all throughout the regular season next year and into the playoffs. Mm. We need some stability that in that position. We need you to come and speak out publicly in favor of David Blatt, or if you don't want to, if you don't want to play ball with David Blatt, let's go find somebody else. Who do you want?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what maybe what the Cavs have to do.
Can you imagine you go to the NBA Finals and you're going to let go of your coach? How often does that happen?
Oh, I know.
You come
within two games of winning the NBA Final, NBA Championship,
yeah,
and you're letting go of your head coach?
How often do teams...
make sense.
Yeah, right but, after I mean, the championship run.
This is you know, maybe part of a bigger conversation where how much power does an owner have versus a superstar? I mean, who's running this club? I mean, if the owner says, that's the guy I want coaching this basketball team, I don't care what you say, well, then LeBron's gone in a year or something. You know what I mean?
But I'm okay with LeBron going to ownership and saying, this isn't going to work. I need somebody else. He just needs to do it. He can't be passive aggressive about it the way he was, like, as this played out. No, sir.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Whether this is a relationship that deteriorated over the course of the season in the playoffs, that's fine. Obviously, you're not going to do anything during the playoffs. But as soon as that season ended, LeBron needed to go to Dan Gilbert's office and say either, you know what, I'm sorry, I'm going to sort out with David over the summer, or I need somebody else.
You know, and I'm thinking not just of LeBron James, but others that are on the club, because if LeBron doesn't exactly respect his head coach and doesn't think highly of his head coach and is not listening to what his head coach has to say, or in the end, you know, the final say is with LeBron and not with the head coach, and it's mostly because of LeBron's doing. You know, if I'm Irving, whatever, insert name of Cleveland Cavalier here that's not LeBron James, you know, I'm not going to be paying attention to my head coach if LeBron James isn't.
No, that's the nightmare scenario. And, you know, all the reserve players played way above their heads in the finals. So Blatt / LeBron, whoever wants the credit for getting the most out of those bench guys in the finals, somebody did a great job with those guys. So it was working at that level. It seems to be that there was just one guy, and unfortunately for David Blatt, it was the most important guy on the team, that seems to have an issue with him.
Knowing what the Cleveland Cavaliers are right now and how they might retool, one would think, over the course of this summer that they're going to retool, do you guys still figure the Cavs will be the team to beat in the East?
I don't see why not. They still have very, very good players. That's generally what you need. I mean, all the coaching stuff aside, I mean, LeBron, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, like, it's a very good team.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they have the greatest player in the world, apparently, so they'll get their nose.
Apparently.
And LeBron
aside,
James.
Apparently.
Jokes aside, LeBron James on the team, and you've got 11 warm bodies, you're going to get to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, well,
in that East, I think, yeah.
In that Eastern Conference, yeah, maybe. So it's not the Toronto Raptors, huh? Still not, huh?
I don't know. Maybe they'll win next year. You don't know that. Maybe.
I don't know that.
Yeah.
I was hoping.
Andrew Wiggins is going to come in and save the day.
Very quickly. Lou Williams, is he gone?
I don't know. Maybe.
I know you don't know. I'm asking you if you
Sorry,
think
I just
he's going
swung right through that curveball.
I'm asking
I don't know.
You if you think he's going to be gone, because if he's asking for like $8-9 million a year over a course of 3 or 4 years, I don't see the Raptors improving at the four position and bringing back Lou Williams.
What's going to happen with Amir Johnson? Is he gone for sure?
I think they improve on Amir Johnson. They can't go again into this year with Amir Johnson as your starting four. That's not going to happen.
Was this the Free Association podcast right now? I don't
know. Oh, Dave Zarum is losing his mind.
Yeah, I know. Right.
Dave Zarum could have been here and he decided not to. Well, I don't know. He didn't have a decision to make. He just wasn't invited to this week's show. No, I just don't see that happening.
Right.
So I think Lou Williams walks. Speaking of podcasts, we got the At the Letters podcast, Arden Zwelling, alongside
what a segue.
Ben Nicholson-Smith. That's what they pay me for, not for my voice, at least not this week.
Clearly.
So what do you got next on the At the Letters podcast?
We haven't set a plan for Tuesday, to be honest with you.
Great work, Arden.
Baseball changes every day. Every day different. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen, right?
Of course.
Like, 3 days ago, everybody, you know, the Jays were in the tank, right? Because they'd lost two in a row and everybody was upset about how they're going to go on this losing streak.
Now John Gibbons was getting fired, right?
And now they've won three in a row. I remember I came on with you and it was like, yep, the season's over. They lost two. Right?
Yeah, they lost two in a row.
Right? So it changes so frequently that, you know, it's hard to plan too far ahead. But we're going to talk about everything to do with the Toronto Blue Jays. It's going to be a good time. And I would listen to it if I was you.
And Mike Cormack, you're everything NHL with .ca. Sportsnet.ca, so you've got quite a busy week ahead of you.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild week coming up. On Monday, Hockey Canada is going to announce their executive team for the 2016 World Cup of Hockey, which is going to be interesting. That's Tom Rennie's first kick at it as CEO of Hockey Canada. It'll be interesting to see who he turns to. Obviously, Steve Yzerman's had it the past couple of times. He's not going to be back. It'll probably be a mix of the usual suspects, the assistants Peter Chiarelli's of the world who have been by Yzerman's side the past couple of times. Then we got the NHL Awards on Wednesday, I believe. which will be fun. That's in Las Vegas. You can catch that on Sportsnet. And the draft, of course, on Friday night is going to be really fascinating. I expect, as someone told me, one of our Sportsnet insiders, he expects, quote, total chaos this summer in terms of player movement.
Oh, fantastic.
How's that for sell?
We look forward to chaos. And next up, as you mentioned, in the world of hockey, Hockey Canada's World Cup of Hockey News Conference, it starts at 11 a.m. on Monday. You could hear it live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. Watch it on Sportsnet Ontario, East, West, and Pacific, and Sportsnet.ca. Arden Zwelling, Mike Cormack, thanks for putting up with me and my voice this week.
Thanks, Wolfman.
Thanks, Barry.
Appreciate it.
Wolfman Jeff Sam, it continues. I'll have Sportsnet today, just an abbreviated version. I'm going to have Zach Hampel. Now, he's the guy that caught the ball last night with Alex Rodriguez getting his 3,000th hit. It was a home run. Zach Hampel is a friend of mine and an author on the subject of catching baseballs. And Zach is going to join us at noon, and he doesn't know what to do. He's, you know, at first he said, I'm keeping the ball. The Yankees could not convince him otherwise. But he went through the night and gets up this morning saying, well, he's kind of rethinking his decision. So let's help him out. Give us a call at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590. Should Zach Hampel keep A-Rod's 3,000th hit ball? We'll talk about it on Sportsnet today. I'm Jeff Sam at the Sportsnet Radio Network.